Objection 2. Oh, but sir, the Lord hath smitten me in my nearest and dearest comforts and contentments, and how then can I hold my peace? God hath taken away a husband, a wife, a child, an only child, a bosom friend, and how then can I be silent? Answer. To this I answer, first, if God did not strike thee in that mercy which was near and dear unto thee, it would not amount to an affliction. That is not worthy the name of an affliction that does not strike at some bosom mercy. That trouble is no trouble that doth not touch some choice contentment. That storm is no storm that only blows off the leaves but never hurts the fruit. That thrust is no thrust that only touches the clothes but never reaches the skin. That cut is no cut that only cuts the hat but never touches the head. Neither is that affliction any affliction that only reaches some remote enjoyment but never reaches a Joseph, a Benjamin. Secondly, the best mercy is not too good for the best God. The best of the best is not good enough for him who is goodness itself, the best child, the best yoke fellow, the best friend, the best jewel in all thy crown must be readily resigned to thy best God. There is no mercy, no enjoyment, no contentment worthy of God but the best. The milk of mercy is for others, the cream of mercy is due to God. The choicest, the fairest and the sweetest flowers are fittest for the bosom of God. If he will take the best flower in all the garden and plant it in a better soil, how hast thou any cause to murmur? Wilt thou not hold thy peace? Malachi 1, verses 13 and 14. Thirdly, your near and dear mercies were first the Lord's before they were yours, and always the Lord's more than they were yours. When God gives a mercy, he doth not relinquish his own right in that mercy. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 14. All things come of thee, and of thine own have we given thee. The sweet of mercy is yours, but the sovereign right to dispose of your mercies is the Lord's. And whatsoever thou art, thou owest to him that made thee, and whatsoever thou hast, thou owest to him that redeemed thee. You say it is but just and reasonable that men should do with their own as they please, and is it not just and reasonable that God, who is Lord paramount, should do with his own as he pleases? Dost thou believe that the great God may do in heaven what he pleases, and on the seas what he pleases, and in the nations and kingdoms of the world what he pleases, and in thy heart what he pleases? And dost thou not believe that God may do in thy house what he pleases, and do with thy mercies what he pleases? Job 9, verse 12, Behold, he taketh away, or he snatcheth away. It may be a husband, a wife, a child, an estate. Who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, What doest thou? Who dares cavil against God? Who dares question that God that is unquestionable, that chief Lord that is uncontrollable, and who may do with his own what he pleaseth? Daniel 4, verse 35. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, What doest thou? Where is the prince, the peasant, the master, the servant, the husband, the wife, the father, the child, that dares say to God, What doest thou? In matters of arithmetical accounts, set one against 10, 10 against 100, 100 against 1,000, 1,000 against 10,000. Although there be great odds, yet there is some comparison. But if a man could set down an infinite number, then there could be no comparison at all, because the one is infinite, the other finite. So set all the princes and powers of the earth in opposition to God. They shall never be able to withstand him. It was once the saying of Pompey that with one stamp of his foot he could raise all Italy in arms. But let the great God but stamp with his foot, and he can raise all the world in arms to own him, to contend for him, or to revenge any affronts that by any are put upon him. And therefore, who shall say unto him, What doest thou? Water is stronger than earth, fire stronger than water, angels stronger than men, and God stronger than them all. And therefore, who shall say unto God, What doest thou? When he takes their nearest and their dearest mercies from them. But fourthly, it may be thou hast not made a happy improvement of thy near and dear mercies whilst thou enjoyed them. Thou hast been taken with thy mercies, but thy heart hath not been taken up in the improvement of them. There are many who are very much taken with their mercies who make no conscience of improving their mercies. Have thy near and dear mercies been a star to lead thee to Christ? Have they been a cloud by day and a pillar of light by night to lead thee towards the heavenly Canaan? Have they been a Jacob's ladder to thy soul? Hast thou by them been provoked to give up thyself to God as a living sacrifice? Hast thou improved thy near and dear mercies to the inflaming of thy love to God, to the strengthening of thy confidence in God, to the raising of thy communion with God, and to the engaging of thy heart to a more close and circumspect walking before God? If thou hast not thus improved them, thou hast more cause to be mute than to murmur, to be silent than to be impatient, to fall out with thyself than to fall out with thy God. Children and fools are taken with many things, but improve nothing. Such children and fools are most men. They are much taken with their mercies, but they make no improvement of their mercies, and therefore no wonder if God strip them of their mercies. The candle of mercy is set up not to play by, but to work by. Pliny speaks of one Crescinus, who improved a little piece of ground to a far greater advantage than his neighbors could a greater quantity of land. Thereupon he was accused of witchcraft, but he, to defend himself, brought into the court his servants and their working tools and said, "These are my witchcrafts, O ye Romans. These servants and these working tools are all the witchcraft that I know of." When the people heard this plea, with one consent they acquitted him and declared him not guilty. And so his little piece of ground was secured to him. There is no way to secure your mercies but by improving of them. There is nothing that provokes God to strip you of your mercies like the non-improvement of them. Matthew 25, verses 28 to 31. Take therefore the talent from him and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. By some stroke or other, God will take away the mercy that is not improved. If thy slothfulness hath put God upon passing a sentence of death upon the dearest mercy, thank thyself and hold thy peace. Fifthly, if in this case God had made thee a precedent to others, thou must have held thy peace. How much more then shouldst thou be mute when God hath made many others precedents to thee? Did not God smite Aaron in his dear and near enjoyments? Leviticus 10, 1 and 2. And doth he not hold his peace? Did not God smite David in his Absalom, and Abraham in his Sarah, and Job in his sons, daughters, estate and body, and Jonah in his gourd? Art thou more beloved than these? No. Hast thou more grace than these? No. Hast thou done more for divine glory than these? No. Art thou richer in spiritual experiences than these? No. Hast thou attained to higher enjoyments than these? No. Hast thou been more serviceable in thy generation than these? No. Hast thou been more exemplary in thy life and conversation than these? No. And why shouldst thou murmur and fret at that which hath been the common lot of the dearest saints? Though God hath smitten thee in this or that near and dear enjoyment, it is thy wisdom to hold thy peace, for that God that hath taken away one might have taken away all. Justice writes a sentence of death upon all Job's mercies at once, and yet he holds his peace. Job 1. And wilt not thou hold thine, though God hath cropped the fairest flower in all thy garden? Anytus, a young spark of Athens, came reveling into Alcibiades' house, and as he sat at supper with some strangers, he arose on a sudden and took away one half of his place. Thereupon the guests stormed and took on at it. He bade them be quiet and told them that he had dealt kindly with him, since that he had left the one half, whereas he might have taken all. So, when our hearts begin to storm and take on, when God smites us in this near mercy and in that dear enjoyment, oh, let us lay the law of silence upon our hearts. Let us charge our souls to be quiet. For that God that hath taken away one child might have taken away every child. And he that hath taken away one friend might have taken away every friend. And he that hath taken away a part of thy estate might have taken away thy whole estate. Therefore, hold thy peace. Let who will murmur, yet be thou mute. Sixthly, it may be thy sins have been much about thy near and dear enjoyments. It may be thou hast overloved them, and overprized them, and overmuch delighted thyself in them. It may be they have often had thy heart, when they should have had but thy hand. It may be that care, that fear, that confidence, that joy that should have been expended upon more noble objects hath been expended upon them. Thy heart, O Christian, is Christ's bed of spices, and it may be thou hast bedded thy mercies with thee when Christ hath been put to lie in an outhouse. Luke 2, verse 7. Thou hast had room for them when thou hast had none for him. They have had the best when the worst have been counted good enough for Christ. It is said of Reuben that he went up to his father's bed. Ah, how often hath one creature comfort, and sometimes another, put in between Christ and your souls? How often have your dear enjoyments gone up to Christ's bed? It is said of the Babylonians that they came into Aholah and Aholahab's bed of love. Ezekiel 23, verse 17. May it not be said of your near and dear mercies that they have come into Christ's bed of love, your hearts. They being that bed wherein Christ delights to rest and repose himself. Canticles 3, verse 7. Now if a husband, a child, a friend shall take up that room in thy soul that is proper and peculiar to God, God will either embitter it, remove it, or be the death of it. If once the love of a wife runs out more to a servant than to her husband, the master will turn him out of doors, though otherwise he were a servant worth gold. The sweetest comforts of this life, they are but like treasures of snow. Now do but take a handful of snow and crush it in your hands, and it will melt away presently. But if you let it lie upon the ground, it will continue for some time. And so it is with the contentments of this world. If you grasp them in your hands and lay them too near your hearts, they will quickly melt and vanish away. But if you will not hold them too fast in your hands, nor lay them too close to your hearts, they will abide the longer with you. There are those that love their mercies into their graves, that hug their mercies to death, that kiss them till they kill them. Many a man hath slain his mercies by setting too great a value upon them. Many a man hath sunk his ship of mercy by taking up in it. Overloved mercies are seldom long-lived. Ezekiel 24, verse 21. When I take from them the joy of their glory, the desire of their eyes, and that whereupon they set their minds, their sons and their daughters. The way to lose your mercies is to indulge them. The way to destroy them is to fix your minds and hearts upon them. Thou mayest write bitterness and death upon that mercy first that hath first taken away thy heart from God. Now if God hath stripped thee of that very mercy with which thou hast often committed spiritual adultery and idolatry, hast thou any cause to murmur? Hast thou not rather cause to hold thy peace and to be mute before the Lord? Christians, your hearts are Christ's royal throne, and in this throne Christ will be chief, as Pharaoh said to Joseph. He will endure no competitor. If you shall attempt to throne the creature, be it never so near and dear unto you, Christ will dethrone it. He will destroy it. He will quickly lay them in a bed of dust who shall aspire to his royal throne. Seventhly, thou hast no cause to murmur because of the loss of such near and dear enjoyments, considering those more noble and spiritual mercies and favors that thou still enjoy. Grant that Joseph is not and Benjamin is not, yet Jesus is. He is yesterday and today, and the same forever. Hebrews 13, verse 8. Thy union and communion with Christ remains still. The immortal seed abides in thee still. 1 John 3, verse 9. The Sun of Righteousness shines upon thee still. Thou art in favor with God still. And thou art under the anointings of the Spirit still, and under the influences of heaven still. And why then shouldst thou mutter, and not rather hold thy peace? I have read of one Didymus, a godly preacher, who was blind. Alexander, a godly man, once asked him whether he was not sore troubled and afflicted for want of his sight. Oh, yes, said Didymus, it is a great affliction and grief unto me. Then Alexander chid him, saying, Hath God given you the excellency of an angel, of an apostle, and are you troubled for that which rats and mice and brute beasts have? So say I. Ah, Christians, hath God blessed you with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places? Ephesians 1, 3 and 4. Hath the Lord given you himself for a portion? Hath he given you his Son for your redemption and his Spirit for your instruction? And will you murmur? Hath he given his grace to adorn you, his promises to comfort you, his ordinances to better you, and the hopes of heaven to encourage you, and will you mutter? Paulinus Nolinus, when his city was taken from him, prayed thus, Lord, said he, let me not be troubled at the loss of my gold, silver, honor, for thou art all, and much more than all these unto me. In the want of all your sweetest enjoyments, Christ will be all in all unto you. Colossians 3, verse 11. My jewels are my husband, said Phocion's wife. My ornaments are my two sons, said the mother of the Gracchi. My treasures are my friends, said Constantinius. And so may a Christian under his greatest losses say, Christ is my richest jewels, my chiefest treasures, my best ornaments, my sweetest delights. Look what all these things are to a carnal heart, a worldly heart. That and more is Christ to me. Eighthly, if God by smiting thee in thy nearest and dearest enjoyments shall put thee upon a more thorough smiting and mortifying of thy dearest sins, thou hast no cause to murmur. God cures David of adultery by killing his endeared child. There is some Delilah, some darling, some beloved sin or other that a Christian's calling, condition, constitution, or temptations leads him to play withal and to hug in his own bosom rather than some other. Psalm 18, verse 23, and Hebrews 12, verse 1. Is in a ground that lieth untilled amongst the great variety of weeds, there is usually some master weed that is rifer and ranker than all the rest. And as it is in the body of man, that although in some degree or other, more or less, there be a mixture of all the four elements, not any of them wholly wanting, yet there is some one of them predominant that gives the denomination. In which regard, some are said to be of a sanguine, some of a phlegmatic, some of a choleric, and some of a melancholic constitution. So it is also in the souls of men. Though there be a general mixture and medley of all evil and corrupt qualities, yet there is some one usually that is paramount, which, like the prince of devils, is most powerful and prevalent, that swayeth and showeth forth itself more eminently and evidently than any other of them do. And as in every man's body there is a seed and principle of death, yet in some there is a proneness to one kind of disease more than other that may hasten death. So, though the root of sin and bitterness hath spread itself over all, yet every man hath his inclination to one kind of sin rather than another. And this may be called a man's proper sin, his bosom sin, his darling sin. Now it is one of the hardest works in this world to subdue and bring under this bosom sin. Oh, the prayers, the tears, the sighs, the sobs, the groans, the gripes that it will cost a Christian before he brings under this darling sin. Look upon a rabbit's skin, how well it comes off till it comes to the head. But then what hauling and pulling is there before it stirs? So it is in the mortifying, in the crucifying of sin. A man may easily subdue and mortify such and such sins, but when it comes to the head sin, to the master sin, to the bosom sin, oh, what tugging and pulling is there? What striving and struggling is there to get off that sin, to get down that sin? Now, if the Lord by smiting thee in some near and dear enjoyment shall draw out thy heart to fall upon smiting of thy master's sin, and shall so sanctify the affliction as to make it issue in the mortification of thy bosom corruption, what eminent cause wilt thou have rather to bless him than to sit down and murmur against him? And doubtless, if thou art dear to God, God will, by striking thy dearest mercy, put thee upon striking at thy darling sin, and therefore hold thy peace, even then when God touches the apple of thine eye. Ninthly, consider that the Lord hath many ways to make up the loss of a near and dear mercy to thee. He can make up thy loss in something else that may be better for thee, and he will certainly make up thy loss either in kind or in worth. Matthew 19, verses 27 to 30. He took from David an Absalom, and he gave him a Solomon. He took from him a Michael, and gave him a wise Abigail. He took from Job 7 sons and 3 daughters, and afterwards he gives him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He took from Job a fair estate, and at last doubled it to him. He removed the bodily presence of Christ from his disciples, but gave them more abundantly of his spiritual presence, which was far the greater and the sweeter mercy. If Moses be taken away, Joshua shall be raised in his room. If David be gathered to his fathers, a Solomon shall succeed him in his throne. If John be cast into prison, rather than the pulpit shall stand empty, a greater than John, even Christ himself, will begin to preach. He that lives upon God in the loss of creature comforts shall find all made up in the God of comforts. He shall be able to say, though my child is not, my friend is not, my yoke fellow is not, yet my God liveth, and blessed be my rock. Though this mercy is not and that mercy is not, yet covenant mercies, yet the sure mercies of David continue. 2 Samuel 23, verse 5. These, bed and board with me, these will to the grave and to glory with me. I have read of a godly man who, living near a philosopher, did often persuade him to become a Christian. Oh, but, said the philosopher, I must or may lose all for Christ. To which the good man replied, If you lose anything for Christ, he will be sure to repay it 100-fold. Aye, but, said the philosopher, will you be bound for Christ, that if he doth not pay me, you will? Yes, that I will, said the good man. So the philosopher became a Christian, and the good man entered into bond for performance of covenants. Sometime after it happened that the philosopher fell sick on his deathbed, and holding the bond in his hand, sent for the party engaged, to whom he gave up the bond and said, Christ hath paid all. There is nothing for you to pay. Take your bond and cancel it. Christ will suffer none of his children to go by the loss. He hath all, and he will make up all to them. In the close, Christ will pay the reckoning. No man shall ever have cause to say that he hath been a loser by Christ. And therefore, thou hast much cause to be mute. Thou hast no cause to murmur, though God hath snatched the fairest and the sweetest flower out of thy bosom. Tenthly, how canst thou tell but that which thou callest a near and dear mercy, if it had been continued longer to thee, might have proved the greatest cross, the greatest calamity and misery that ever thou didst meet with in this world? Our mercies, like choice wines, many times turn into vinegar. Our fairest hopes are often blasted. And that very mercy which we sometimes have said should be a staff to support us hath proved a sword to pierce us. How often have our most flourishing mercies withered in our hands, and our bosom contentments been turned into gall and wormwood? If God had continued the life of David's child to him, it would have been but a living monument of his sin and shame. And all that knew the child would have pointed at him, Yonder goes David's bastard, and so have kept David's wound still a-bleeding. 2 Samuel 12, verse 16. Many parents who have sought the lives of their children with tears have lived afterwards to see them take such courses and come to such dismal ends as have brought their gray head with sorrow to their graves. It had been 10,000 times a greater mercy to many parents to have buried their children so soon as ever they had been born than to see them come to such unhappy ends as they often do. Well, Christian, it may be the Lord hath taken from thee such a hopeful son or such a dear daughter, and thou sayest, How can I hold my peace? But hark, Christian, hark, canst thou tell me how long thou must have travailed in birth with them again before they had been twice born? Would not every sin that they had committed against thy gracious God caused a new throe in thy soul? Would not every temptation that they had fallen before been as a dagger at thy heart? Would not every affliction that should have befallen them been as a knife at thy throat? What are those pains and pangs and throes of childbirth to those after pains, pangs, and throes that might have been brought upon thee by the sins and sufferings of thy children? Well, Christians, hold your peace, for you do not know what thorns in your eyes, what goads in your sides, nor what spears in your hearts such near and dear mercies might have proved had they been longer continued. 11thly, thou canst not tell how bad thy heart might have proved under the enjoyments of those near and dear mercies that now thou hast lost. Israel were very bad whilst they were in the wilderness, but they were much worse when they came to possess Canaan, that land of desires. Man's blood is apt to rise with the outward good. In the winter, men gird their clothes about them, but in the summer they let them hang loose. In the winter of adversity, many a Christian girds his heart close to God, to Christ, to gospel, to godliness, to ordinances, to duties, who in the summer of mercy hangs loose from all. I have read of the pine tree that if the bark be pulled off, it will last a long time, but if it continue long on, it rots the tree. Ah, how bad How rotten, how base would many have proved had God not pulled off their bark of health, wealth, friendship, near and dear relations. They stick as close to us as the bark of a tree sticks to the tree. And if God should not pull off this bark, how apt should we be to rot and corrupt ourselves? Therefore, God is fain to bark us and peel us and strip us naked and bare of our dearest enjoyments and sweetest contentments, that so our souls, like the pine tree, may prosper and thrive the better. Who can seriously consider of this and not hold his peace, even then when God takes a jewel out of his bosom? Heap all the sweetest contentments and most desirable enjoyments of this world upon a man, they will not make him a Christian. Heap them up upon a Christian, they will not make him a better Christian. Many a Christian hath been made worse by the good things of this world, but where is the Christian that hath been bettered by them? Therefore be quiet when God strips thee of them. Twelfthly and lastly, get thy heart more affected with spiritual losses, and then thy soul will be less afflicted with those temporal losses that thou mournest under. Hast thou lost nothing of that presence of God that once thou hadst with thy spirit? Hast thou lost none of those warnings, meltings, quickenings, and cheerings that once thou hadst? Hast thou lost nothing of thy communion with God, nor of the joys of the Spirit, nor of that peace of conscience that once thou enjoyed? Hast thou lost none of that ground that once thou hadst God upon sin, Satan, and the world? Hast thou lost nothing of that holy vigor and heavenly heat that once thou hadst in thy heart? If thou hast not, which would be a miracle, a wonder, why dost thou complain of this or that temporal loss? For what is this but to complain of the loss of thy purse when thy God is safe? If thou art a loser in spirituals, why dost thou not rather complain that thou hast lost thy God than that thou hast lost thy gold? And that thou hast lost thy Christ, and that thou hast lost thy husband, and that thou hast lost thy child, and that thou art damnified in spirituals, than that thou art damnified in temporals. Dost thou mourn over the body the soul hath left? Mourn rather over the soul that God hath forsaken, as Samuel did for Saul, saith one. I have read of Honorius, a Roman emperor, who was simple and childish enough. When one told him Rome was lost, he was exceedingly grieved and cried out, "Alas! Alas, for he supposed that it was his hen that was called Rome, which hen he exceedingly loved. But when it was told him it was his imperial city of Rome that was besieged by Alaricus and taken, and all the citizens rifled and made a prey to the rude enraged soldiers, then his spirits were revived that his loss was not so great as he imagined. Now, what is the loss of a husband, a wife, a child, a friend, to the loss of God, Christ, the Spirit, or the least measure of grace or communion with God? I say, what are all such losses but the loss of a hen to the loss of Rome? And yet so simple and childish are many Christians that they are more affected and afflicted with the loss of this and that poor temporal enjoyment than they are with the loss of their most spiritual attainments. Ah, Christians, be but more affected with spiritual losses, and you will be more quiet and silent under temporal losses. Let the loss of Rome trouble you more. Then the loss of your hen will not trouble you at all. Let these things suffice for an answer to the second objection.